This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Welcome to this special podcast of The Informer. I'm Dean Arcuri and I'm joined today by Rome Murray, sex educator and author of For Fox's Sake.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Now, we are diving straight into some pretty heavy topics that are going on in Australia at the moment. I mean, we've got the postal plebiscite happening. There's a massive amount of conversation about whether you should vote no or yes. There's myths, there's misconceptions, and there's a whole lot of stuff being thrown around in the media. So much, in fact, that BuzzFeed turned around last week and put out an article that said basically data provided to BuzzFeed News by media monitoring and analysis company Stream found that across 4,334 news stories in print, online and on TV and radio from September 10th to the 17th, the No campaign was mentioned in the media almost four times as much as the Yes campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
It's an incredible volume of imbalance, you know, when it comes down to it.
And you've got to wonder why. I mean, a lot of people would assume that this imbalance would be occurring simply because it's more sensational.
That when it's really distilled down to the most simple factors, it is exactly that. It's sensational, it is clickbaity, and it makes media metrics look really, really good. I mean, it's obviously how media, the mass media, is approaching most of their news delivery now is really different to what it looked like 5, 10, and especially even 20 years
ago.
And they're less editorial integrity, let's be honest. There are less experienced journalists working, let's be honest, and the need for clickbait is just so intense that, particularly with regards to the same-sex marriage discussion, there are social media pylons. Every time an article comes out, there's a massive social media pylon. It makes their metrics look beautiful. So you can understand why that's incredibly tempting to keep going down that road.
I mean, it's the path that we seem to be in now.
Yeah.
With what media is, and it really just changed the way in which we consume it.
It completely has. And, you know, it's interesting. Social media has impacted it in a very interesting way on two different levels.
Mm.
On one level, it's actually really exciting and really positive because when that BuzzFeed data came out that you mentioned before, I had a bit of a forage around and I also found some data saying that in terms of Instagram, there's actually five times the amount of yes narrative on Instagram. So the general public is well behind it and going, this is actually amazing, vote yes, versus the mainstream media, which is taking a completely different stance. So it's great in the sense that your average punter can get out there and say, hey, awesome, I'm totally behind this. But equally, social media gives every, you know, white supremacist, racist, homophobe out there a voice
as well. It gives everyone a platform, doesn't it?
Yep.
It does give everyone that platform. And I mean, that's the danger now. It all comes down to the media in which you seem to consume.
Yes.
You know, and the confusion becomes social media is just that, it's social, and mainstream media is just that, it's mainstream.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that they are the media in whole. They're not giving you the whole picture.
Very, very true. And there's a huge amount of almost unintentional bias because the way the algorithms within particularly Facebook, but also Instagram, are set up that you tend to live within your bubble. So if you're a raging racist on social media, you'll have plenty of material to pick and choose from in your newsfeed. It's almost an unintentional consequence, the way these social media feeds are set up to give you a great user experience. It also influences the news, you know, that we receive and consume, which
yeah.
is huge.
So, I mean, really, that's what's impacting what we're seeing and how we're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to the mainstream media, no, I mean, it's got to be more than just the sensationalist nature of the story. You know, it's the fact that you can put something together with a no, you can put together a headline that says Tony Abbott is saying he wants his sister's children to be raised by someone else. And even though that's not actually something that Tony Abbott said, the clicking goes through the roof. And it's still something that now, I think 2 weeks later, it's still something that's being quoted as something that Tony Abbott said.
Yep. The No campaign, particularly the Tony Abbotts within the No campaign, have been absolute spin masters.
Yeah.
They have just been extraordinary and they have pulled out just about every, you know, debating tactic known to man, from the red herring to the straw man. They're the false equivalencies. When it comes down to it, most of us have received our form in the mail, which has got a very simple yes and no box. That is all this should be.
Exactly.
And they are talking about we're losing religious freedom. Not true. They're talking about we're going to start marrying bridges and horses. Not true.
The bridges is a personal favourite.
Oh, honestly, it's so ridiculous. But, you know, it's so out there, it just keeps getting all the headlines, and it's much more interesting than someone, you know, waving a rainbow flag going, I think it's a really good idea because human rights are great. So,
I mean, it does get the attention, it does get the headlines, but we're now at a point where we're not consuming the truth.
Correct. We're absolutely not consuming the truth, and there's no other way to sugarcoat it.
So how do we contain that? What do we do?
I don't think there's an easy solution to it. I definitely...
If it was, I think we'd be doing it, wouldn't
well,
we?
Well, exactly. I absolutely feel that the mass media needs to be much more responsible with the way they report. But that's been sliding downwards for a really long time now, and I don't know if it's going to take, a really huge event to turn it around. But, I mean, we've got President Donald Trump in the White House at the moment, and a huge part of him being elected is this same media landslide that we're seeing happen in Australia around the same-sex marriage debate.
Yeah.
And with someone like Trump getting into power, that didn't influence how, you know, American media operated, nor did it influence how Facebook or Twitter, you know, audit their fake news and remove it. That it hasn't had an impact. And, you know, Australia's just really feeling those, shockwaves afterwards, and we're just experiencing a really horrible time.
Well, let's take one news report that's come out in the past couple of days, and let's just have a look at that and see how it's played around.
Yeah.
Macklemore performing at the grand final of the NRL.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Abbott saying this is attack on sports shouldn't be politicised, even though he was saying freedom of speech was up for attack. You've got Pauline Hanson turning around and saying, I don't know who Macklemore is, but sport should not be politicised. With statements like this and the way that they're used, is it that these things are being politicised, or is it that it's being played around in the media?
It's being played around in the media. There's nothing political about hiring someone who's got a really great album out, has got number ones all over town, and just happens to have a track called Same Love. It's not even on his track list that was released today. So he's released a set list that he's performing at the NRL. Same Love's not even on it. Again, the Hansons and the Abbotts are stone cold lying. This has nothing to do with anything. It's not a headline.
And the media are making these headlines and they're making these stories, and that's changing our conversation as a nation.
Yep, exactly. And the media needs to take some responsibility for what it's doing. I have no idea how that's going to happen, though. I don't see anyone standing up and going, oh, let's do something about this. It's irresponsible.
Well, isn't it also important for us to change the way in which we consume these things?
Yes.
But that's easier said than done, isn't it?
It is. It's really like, you know, fronting up to a tsunami. You know, it's how the general population tends to operate is mass movement. You know, we tend to grab an idea and go with it, and you can't, you know, change or influence the behaviours of a lot of people. It either takes legislation or it takes a major, for example, Facebook algorithm. If Zuckerberg came up and said, we're actually going to start monitoring fake news, and if we believe that a page is linking to too much fake news, we're actually going to shut the page down, that would actually have an impact. But a couple of million individuals isn't going to have an impact. They're going to go with the easy option or the most entertaining option.
Well, if we look at the Yes campaign and look at what, let's talk about why we think they're not getting the attention that they should. Is it that the fact that their message hasn't changed? It's a really simple one. This isn't that complicated. And now we're 2 weeks into the postal plebiscite, or well, we're in the third week now, and there's a concerted effort to not engage with what's going on with the No campaign.
Yeah.
But in this past week, has that helped or hindered?
It's a really, really hard call. It's definitely possible to take on a campaign like the No campaign. They've actually been, there's been enough leaks and there's been enough commentary to know that there's a series of tactics and key messages that they're using. And the Yes campaign has obviously made the decision to not stoop to their level, essentially. It would be actually quite easy for the Yes campaign to come up with a whole bunch of really awesome catch cries, but you'd be falling into the same trap that a lot of the Hansons and the Abbotts are, where it's just not true. And even though it's been less impactful, I do believe that the Yes campaign has had a great deal more integrity and a great deal more authenticity. And it is a very simple message. It's very much this is a basic human rights thing that really should have happened a long time ago.
But do we think that message is really encroaching into the psyche of the nation?
I think it probably is more than we give it credit for. There's a lot of incredibly positive stuff coming up on social media. But I think the only thing is that a lot of it does get drowned out by the shouty few. I think we only need to look at, you know, people like Mark Latham, who's still very capable of generating a great deal of headlines every time he sends a tweet, where he doesn't really have a platform. He doesn't really have
social media is what's giving these people these platforms. Exactly, that's what's really interesting about it.
Mm.
And what's really interesting as well is everyone's really aware that they are in this is a vocal minority.
Yes.
This doesn't mean that everyone who votes no thinks this or everyone who votes no say this, and different people have different reasons for their voting, which is why the people are encouraged to talk about why and to share their and why the Yes campaign keeps wanting us to share our stories.
Yeah.
But the reality is that they've become the face of this and they're actually very minor.
Yes.
But we give them this presence on social media that makes it seem so much bigger.
Oh, absolutely. And I've seen a lot of people doing fantastic work, actually getting out there and going almost comment by comment and going out and going really beautiful, well-reasoned arguments that are based in data, that are based in fact. Even a friend of mine has picked the eye teeth out of the Bible and, you know, gone, actually, here are all the instances, you know, in the Bible where what you're saying is absolute rubbish. And they're taking the time to do that when most people are choosing to avoid the comments quite rightly. But it's still really exhausting. And I'm finding that 9 times out of 10, it's still not having an impact. People are now at a point where they have a set of opinions. The no voters frequently have unpopular opinions.
Yeah.
They are very sensitive about being called out as homophobes or what have you, and that's causing them to be even firmer, you know, down it. And it's where you get sort of the hashtag no flake. I'm a no flake. Oh my goodness, everyone's being so mean to me because, you know, I'm going to change my vote. I'm going to vote no because I feel like someone, you know, challenged me on social media once or sent a text to my phone. You're never going to vote yes if that's your take. It's absolute rubbish. And these no flakes need to own up to the fact that they were never going to vote yes and just admit it.
I mean,
got a problem.
The text message over the weekend that the Yes campaign did, that's a huge example of the way in which that was portrayed in the media was only portrayed. We heard so much about people complaining about it. We heard so much about people being outraged. We had articles come out turning around and saying that this was a problem. The Yes campaign has gone the wrong way. Now they could be losing votes.
Yep.
And the reality is that more than 200,000 people engaged with those tweets.
Oh, exactly. It's absolutely crazy. And particularly when you flip it and you go, and what has the No campaign been doing? They've been invading our letterboxes. They've been doing robocalling, some of which has been funded from the USA, incidentally. They've been, you know, they have been graffitiing. They've been throwing rocks through windows. And to turn around and go, oh, but a text message. I mean, gee, I get text messages from my local pizza joint. So, you know. One text message, again, shouldn't be influencing anyone's votes in a negative fashion. And I can't believe the media has gone out and treated it the way they have.
But now it's down to that roughly 10% of people that haven't made up their mind. We've always known the reality of this is there are two sides to it. And the hard yeses and the hard noes were always going to make their votes.
Absolutely.
They were already going to do them. And they were going to do them in the first few weeks.
Mm.
By now, if you were going to vote, you voted. It's now our attention needs to be focusing on the people who haven't, either for the reason why. I've had some people's parents say, oh, but it's not compulsory for me to vote, so I don't have to worry.
Mm.
So now in the next month, five or six weeks, we have to focus our attention on the people that haven't voted yet or haven't decided.
Yeah.
When we look at this media landscape, does it really give space for there to be a decent conversation about this?
I don't know if media is actually the right place for us to be, you know, looking for a solution for that. I really enjoyed the campaign that's rolling from the Yes side of the fence, which was to call a relative and actually have a chat to them about it, because these are the votes that you can make a difference with. You know, I had a really, really great conversation with my dad, who's in his very late 70s, and, you know, he was like, well, he is pretty savvy. He's happy to go out to the Laird on a Friday night and hang out with, you know, a bunch of mates and all the rest of it. But he actually did have a bit of an issue with the same-sex marriage, and we had a really good talk about it. And when I said, well, look, you know, your nephew, my cousin, has been with his partner for 1 million years approximately. They have a home together, and here are the implications. If one of them goes into ICU, there are problems. If one of them passes away unexpectedly, there are going to be problems with superannuation, the home, the mortgage, the everything. And when I broke it down and I said, there are 52 differences between a de facto relationship or a civic relationship versus the automatic marriage status. There are 52 impacts or pivot points that actually affect people. And he was like, that's terrible. Totally voting yes. Oh my goodness, that is appalling.
But that's, I mean, we've tried to get that information out and that doesn't seem to be penetrating.
Well, it's not penetrating on the mass media scale whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's a real struggle on the social media scale. I'm finding it's working on a one-on-one basis, but that's really slow work. And that's where, you know, as many of us wearing a little yes badge, you know, to pick up the phone and talk to people, that actually might be the only way that's going to change that, you know, final 10%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's pivot to another part of the whole. You are a sex educator.
Yep.
And the No campaign have really taken sex and sex with young people as something they can hold up as a problem that will become a bigger problem should same-sex marriage happen. Yep. Now, we know that's just crap. Like, that's as close as I'm going to come to swearing on a news and current affairs show.
Yep.
We know that's just ridiculous.
Mm.
But from if we're looking at how that's playing out in the media, it does seem to be causing massive problems. I mean, it's the way that things seem to work out where the Safe Schools program now isn't seen as the kind of program that it was within schools. And it's because of this kind of attack that it occurred.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Safe Schools has just been under constant attack since the day it was launched. Mm. And it's, as you mentioned, it's already seen a one-stage rollback in its content anyhow. And I'm just completely astounded at the constant attacks on what is essentially an anti-bullying program.
Yeah.
This is an anti-bullying program first and foremost. But I'm also completely appalled that I guess there's this absolute mania that we're not to talk to teenagers or younger people about sex or their bodies. Mm. And the research tells time and time and time and time again, there was even a new study that came out about 6 weeks ago that reiterated it. The more education, age-appropriate education by all means, but the more sex, you know, and relationship education teenagers have, they have fewer STIs. They start having sex a bit later in life. On the heterosexual side of the fence, they have much fewer teen pregnancies. Like, it's a win-win for everyone all around, and they're more confident. They understand consent better, all of the good things. There isn't a single negative in having really good age-appropriate sex education. And it's so sad to see these constant attacks on the Safe Schools program on a matter that is completely irrelevant. Like, it's just ridiculous that the same-sex marriage debate is now, let's also have a look at the education piece, because they're two completely different conversations.
Well, the media has, I mean, it's not just the people who have been attacking it. It's not just the politicians the fringe politicians that have been going, oh, we're going to say this and we're going to say that, and that's how our constituents feel. But the media has played a huge part in that as well.
It has. There's always a bit of a challenge in sex education, because there's always a quite substantial percentage of parents that have a level of discomfort around sex education. They feel that if you talk about a thing, it plants a seed and it turns teenagers into, you know, sex crazed, experimenting fiends. And it's, you know, it's obviously not true, but there is that natural knee-jerk reaction that almost every parent has when they understand that their teenager's growing up. And that is very much played into the mass media narrative.
Yeah.
The mass media knows that if it goes along the line of saying, you know, delay sex education or don't do it at all, or, you know, Safe Schools is bad, they're going to have a readership or a listenership that goes, yeah, you're awesome. To challenge parents, particularly in relation to their children, that is one of the toughest, you know, rocks to roll up a hill. And I don't see the mainstream media doing it responsibly anytime soon.
Well, and that's one of the reasons which has brought us to this point.
Mm.
That's one of the reasons that's given this kind of power to this vitriol against our community with something that has nothing to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been incredibly damaging to teens of all, you know, all rainbow colours, hetero, straight, bi, trans, the whole bit. Because as a sex educator, I know a huge number of other sex educators and sex therapists, and we've got private Facebook groups where we're rallying resources, because the phones are running off the hook. Mm. There are a lot of young people being really, really hurt by what's going on in the media at the moment, incredibly hurt. So we're raising money to support phone lines. We're going, who can work on Sunday? Because I've got a backlog of people who are just desperate to come in and talk to someone.
Mm.
You know, I don't think people who are just consuming a bit of, you know, mass media and playing a bit on social media have any concept of the actual damage it's doing within families.
Is it now a safe time to say that we live in a space now where our media is out of touch?
Completely. I do think so, yeah. There's a massive disconnect between, well, I mean, you know, we talked about it before, you know, the BuzzFeed stuff has reported that they're, you know, no is getting four times the amount of, you know, share of voice, but also on Instagram, yes is getting five times the share of voice. Tells you right in that one bit of data that the media is completely out of touch with what its readers actually want to know.
Could it also be the simple fact that the readers aren't engaging with what they're putting out and that the amount of no that they're putting out is the response on Instagram?
Yeah, I think that can be a bit of a factor for sure.
Yeah.
And the mass media has fragmented into a lot of, you know, there's a lot of podcasts, there's a lot of bloggers out there, there's a lot of alternate news sources, some certainly more credible than others. So people can also, you know, pick and choose where they consume their news. And sometimes that's a good thing, other times that's a bad thing. So, you know, it's a really challenging time.
Well, over the next 5 weeks of the rest of the postal plebiscite, what's your advice for how people can level that field for themselves?
I think that people need to be able to recognise when they're feeling a bit under the weather about the whole thing and step back or managing, you know, how they consume media and social media, because when it's all said and done, the individual has to come first and take care of yourself. I also think that if you are feeling tough enough to wade into the comments and calmly respond and take the high road, I think that's a really positive thing. But I also think if we feel that we have a relative or a friend who might be a bit on the fence that could actually, you know, with a bit of reasoned discussion, could make a call and vote, that's a fantastic thing to do. So have as many one-on-one discussions as you can stomach.
That sounds like fantastic advice. I want to thank you for taking the time to come and join us today on The Informer.
Thanks so much for having me, Dean.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.